In the Great Hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes, created from the cosmic legends of the universe. Matt King. Donald Marshall. Aaron Kendricks. And Peter Robinson. This week, it's Geeks on Comic-Con. We'll give you the latest news in comics, graphic novels, movies, television, and much, much more. Now these four heroes stand together. Their mission, to fight injustice, to right that which is wrong, and to serve all mankind.
Welcome back, my geeklings.
I get to be Gleep. Me.
Ooh, Gleek. Ooh.
Gleek? Is it Gleek or Gleep?
Gleek.
Gleek.
Well, okay, what was the name
no,
of the
Gleep
guy?
Is a Herculoid.
Right, that's
Gleep.
What I wanted
yeah,
to know.
Gloop and Gleep.
Gloop and Gleep. Right?
Yes, that's what you get to be.
Dan, Gina, Gleek, or...
Gleek was the monkey, right?
Gleek was the monkey.
But Gleep...
There was Windy...
Marvin.
Marvin and...
Super Mutt? Wonder Mutt?
Super Mutt.
I remember Wonder Mutt.
I think it's Wonder Mutt, but I'm not sure.
Anyway.
Oh, could be God, wrong. The shame. I have no idea.
Anyway, I figured, you know, sure, the lawyers might get on us, but
that could
might
be fun.
Sneak it in. I thought it was fun, so we'll do this one episode.
Maybe in three episodes we'll have to cut it out. Who knows?
And it's the perfect theme for this episode.
Dun, dun, dun.
Comic-Con!
That's right. We just got back from Comic-Con. And I'm tired.
That was our geek week. Well, you guys should be really tired.
You guys, I'm surprised you guys aren't wiped.
Don and I just slid in and slid out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm wiped out.
So not making a comment on that.
I was there for 3 days.
Yeah, you must be really wiped out.
I was there.
2 days, I was like, whew.
I went up a little earlier because they had the Star Wars Fan Film Awards, and Shane, his film was there, something I helped him write.
Yep, congratulations.
And it won
awards.
The top two spots. It
Woo-hoo!
Won the Lucas Choice, and it won the fan award.
Congratulations.
Excellent.
Fan's Choice.
And Lucas Choice means actually Lucas saw them, right?
Lucas saw it and picked
it.
So. At least that's what we assume.
And so is there anyone out there who hasn't seen Peter's piece, we are still linked to it off of our website. So go to www.geeksan.com to view Peter's short film.
How long is that exclusive for Adam Films? Do they own it now?
I have no idea. I mean, I think it's – I mean, he makes – every time
you click on
they
it.
Click on it, he gets some tiny little thing.
Right,
but
right.
Who Shane does?
Yep.
Oh, he gets a remainder.
Yeah,
that's kind of nice.
Like, you know – the
like half a cent or
yeah, it's, I have no
I've
idea what it
a
is.
A residual but... for 23 cents, and I was still excited.
There you go. So, shall we introduce ourselves?
Yes.
Go
why
on
not? Ahead. Hi, my name is Don. I am a writer and video game professional here in Hollywood, and I am a geek
of a newly changed job. So, Don,
I was going to announce it as part of our geek news, but of course we can interrupt our introduction for that.
But Don, introduce yourself, Matt.
All right, I'm Matt King. I'm an actor here in Hollywood, and I'm an actor and a geek and stuff.
And I am Peter Robinson, and I am a screenwriter here in Los Angeles, and I am the one with the clone voice of Matt. There's a slight difference.
My name is Aaron Kendricks, and I am a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Los Angeles / Hollywood, and I am a geek.
Yay!
Yay!
So our Geek Week was Comic-Con. Your Geek Week also.
I had an eventful Geek Week.
I think we should reveal what the mystery of your last gaming company was, finally. So people will now know what gaming company you work for.
Worked for.
And now keep the mystery of the new one.
Okay. I believe I can safely say that I have just left the video game company Activision,
mm-hmm.
where I was working as a project lead for quality assurance.
And that's probably why some people were confused.
Senior tester, project lead.
You other game developers were sending games through you that you were playtesting.
That's
so
right.
Exactly. Other people were freaking out because they thought...
So straddling the fence.
They could right. never so, tell who Don was.
That's right.
For.
But that is old news. I have left the company. I am moving on to a new, smaller video game company who will remain anonymous, as always. But my new role will be associate producer. So...
Yay.
Yay. I now have more direct control over video games and the things that people will play.
So now I can blame you.
So a whole bunch of fighting games with little Japanese girls.
Absolutely. It's going to be a whole bunch of fighting games with, like, Space Channel 5 minigames.
Yes. Lunch money with DDR subgame.
Well, we have a very big episode this week because we have a lot of news. We have a lot of information. You know, this is going to be...
Too much information.
It's going to be a lot of stuff to talk about.
Right. So we're going to cut news short.
Very
if
short.
Not completely out. Does anybody have any news?
In fact, I am newsless.
I am shutting up.
Okay, you're shutting up.
I am shutting up because I'm the one who always makes it go long. So
I have, it's not news. It's a frustration that I found out today. And if anybody wants to go on the forums and talk about this, it's not very much of a hot topic. But as a Mac owner, Macintosh, and a professional who works on a Macintosh specifically, I went to go to the Apple Store to buy an upgrade to a program, an Adobe product,
mm-hmm.
Adobe After Effects, an upgrade, and found out that Apple doesn't carry almost most of the Adobe products anymore, a third-party developer, because essentially they're pushing their own first-party software, some of which kind of does the same stuff.
Meaning,
not as well.
Meaning what?
Meaning that they are in a world where it's almost impossible to go into a store and buy programs for the Macintosh. They're cutting out some of their developers because they want to push their own products.
So they want to push them to PC.
So
are
they basically
them on a Macintosh? I can't buy Adobe.
But now
After
hold
Effects.
On. Here's the big question: if you're using your new Macintosh program. And you and I are collaborating, and I'm on IBM using an Adobe program.
Mm-hmm.
Can we still collaborate?
Yes, but you won't be able to collaborate if you have the Apple-only program, Motion, or Shake. Okay.
Right, but...
No, you misunderstood what he was asking. And the answer is no.
Yes.
If you're using the Apple-only product, the one that's not...
Right.
Not the
new
Adobe,
program.
The new program that he's speaking of,
mm-hmm.
Motion or Shake, you will not be able to collaborate with someone using the Adobe version, is
right.
what he's saying.
Wow.
That's dumb.
Yeah, you know, this is reminding me of Bill Gates-type maneuvers, which are the things that I actually hate him for, and that Apple's not supposed to typically do.
Well, here's the problem I see. Apple needs to watch their shit, because they cannot... Let's just put it this way. If they make it so that Adobe will make PC products only, I'm going PC.
Yep.
That's my profession. I cannot buy what Apple pushes only. If they aren't going to help support third-party developers, which there's almost zero. No one's making any programs for a Macintosh. So when Adobe, the biggest one on the planet, is making shit for you, you put it in your fucking store. So I can buy it.
We'll bleep that out in post.
Oh, no.
Flash Gordon will come here and beat the crap out of you.
No.
Peter's got his hands on his hips.
We like our mature rating, okay?
Okay, well, anyway, that's it for me.
I'm fucking shocked.
I'm saying.
It was very frustrating. I own a computer. It's hard to find software for, and the computer manufacturer is making it even harder for me. Thank you very much, Apple.
Yeah.
Well, now, can you still buy the Macintosh Adobe software?
Online
or at maybe Virgin
went
or anything
to Fry's,
like that?
Oh, no. I went to Fry's, the biggest software hardware store in LA, and they don't carry it either.
No.
Wow.
So, see, this is why when the geeklings came to visit us at our little drink fest after the Comic-Con, one of them looked at Aaron and went, I thought you would be so angry. No, it's not like that
I'm
all the time.
Really.
Yeah, most of the time.
After a couple drinks.
Yes.
All righty. So, no more news or
No, we've got stuff to get
or,
to.
Okay, so...
Oh, should we give a prep for next week? Next week's show?
No.
No? We're just going to surprise them and show them that we got an awesome interview?
Well, we'll talk about it, but it may not be next week.
Oh, okay.
Well, we have a great special interview. We'll tell you about how to get it later.
Yeah. Essentially, there was a lot covered when we went to Comic-Con. We got a lot of interviews. Most of them are real short little blips, and some we just won't actually air because we're just going to take the information from, you know. But we have a really big one that deserves its own episode coming up here.
For those of you who remember our Orson Scott Card interview last year, we got another crowning jewel. So we're going to treat it the same way we did the Orson Scott Card interview.
Exactly. So, let's talk Comic-Con.
It's about comics. We're talking about comics.
Actually, okay. I mean, interestingly enough, Comic-Con seemed like maybe 50% comics at best.
Yeah. Most of what I did at Comic-Con had nothing to do with comics.
I was looking hard for comics this time around.
Well, no. I mean, there was a whole section of a lot of comics. I mean,
I'm not saying they weren't there, but I'm saying for every one comic booth I saw, there was that was producing comics.
Mm-hmm. There was
another booth that was just selling comics, but didn't make their own. Mm-hmm. And then there was a TV show, a movie.
From what I saw of the comics, merchandising, it was a lot of Playboy models. It was the launch of a lot of new comic lines. Like, please pay attention to our stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But for the most part, the blitzes that I was getting in the press mail was all from Universal or Warner Brothers or, you know, check out our new show on the CW.
A lot of the invitations we got were not actually for things that necessarily had booths.
Right.
They were things like, we've rented a hotel room somewhere in the general vicinity, and we'd like for you to come see our stuff on Thursday.
Well, the place was packed. Okay, so, so for our listeners, we are going to give a perspective of Comic-Con that is not very comic-heavy.
Right.
May I start with just by introducing people to what you see when you walk into Comic-Con?
Sure.
Cool. Because just to give people a picture of what this place is.
Yeah.
First off, it takes place in the San Diego Convention Center, which is enormous.
Which is huge.
It's enormous. Each, it's divided up into areas A through H.
Yes.
And each area is probably the size of a lunchroom cafeteria, type of place, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
A large lunchroom.
I'd say every two sections are probably the size of a football field. Does that sound about right?
Yeah.
Every two sections?
Yeah, it's big.
Not that any of us has been on a football field, but yes.
Okay, so first off, when we arrived, Matt and I arrived on the train in San Diego, and then we took the trolley over. When the trolley stopped in front of the place, you have to fight to be able to get off the trolley because the crowds in front of the convention center are so thick you can't disembark.
Yeah, it's like Hong Kong at lunch.
It is. It's people sprawling as far as the eye can see, and half those people are in very elaborate costumes. And in 90-degree weather, you're wondering how some of these people are walking around in plastic foam.
Yeah, by the way, if you go to a convention and you've got wings that are 3 or 4 feet...
Turn around slowly.
Turn around and go home. Because you can't get through the freaking crowd with wings that big. I'm sorry. Go as, Batman. He has a little cape.
There were a lot of Mystiques I noticed.
I didn't see a single Mystique.
I saw three Mystiques this time when I was there.
Really?
With the blue makeup. Interestingly enough, a couple of them were sweating their blue makeup off. That was kind of interesting. Yeah.
I saw a lot of Pikachus.
Yeah.
Really?
And pirates coming out of the arse.
Oh, my God.
Female pirates. Female pirates. And male pirates.
A lot of
cross-dressing pirates. That was interesting.
Lots of drag
king pirates. Women dressed as Jack Sparrow.
Yeah.
Yes. But I would say, 15% of the audience of the crowd as you're moving through these giant hallways with these now big booths. The booths are getting bigger. E3, kind of getting there slowly.
That's the crowd. That's the crowd.
I like big booths.
When you step into the actual area where the booths are, right? Keep in mind, we're talking, what is it, four or five football fields worth of booths? Something like that?
Yeah, that's big.
Yeah.
Booths everywhere.
Booths, as far as the eye can see. There's no rhyme or reason to the way they're laid out. Movie stuff, merchandising stuff, comic book generators, and all these people are just kind of crammed into the same place.
There's a little bit of rhyme and reason. All the small press stuff are in the same area. I noticed that.
Yeah, and all the buyers and sellers are
somewhat in the same area.
Yeah. I didn't see that. I actually saw a lot of the sellers kind of spread evenly along the walls.
Well, Saturday,
I think the sellers were mostly around the outside. They pay right when you come in.
That's true. Got to see it when it was sensible. Don and I only saw it on the day that it was a madhouse.
Yeah, so that's
Friday
true.
Friday wasn't
screaming
super,
hordes.
Wasn't crazy, and I'm sure Thursday was even better.
So you have to figure every single major company. I'm sorry.
Keep going because I'm going to talk about what's out of the hall.
Every single major company that you can think of, whether television networks or comic book publishers,
yep,
or video game companies, movie houses, everyone has an enormous booth. All right. Mm-hmm. And those enormous booths are kind of scattered throughout all of those football fields. Mm-hmm. And then everybody's paying to try and have their little booth kind of orbiting around the big booths,
yes, yeah,
trying to leech off the people that can't fit into those booths, yeah, because they're so overswarmed.
Right. Marvel is all about Spider-Man. So there's Spidey everywhere. And around that were the film companies who were Spidey. And then it, mm-hmm, sort of trailed off and became other things.
And then outside of the halls, the entire rest of the convention center is also filled with rooms for all the panels and talks that are going on.
And discussions.
And discussions, which is great.
People pitching projects that they've just finished or are working on, and, yep, you know,
and then
interviews.
Upstairs.
And then upstairs, the signing room.
Art gallery.
Which is huge.
Yeah.
And that's, we actually this year got to go to a lot of those panels. So, mm-hmm, that's
great.
One of the things we'll be talking about.
Which is great.
And of course, there's the one last room that no one should miss, although I did this year. The room where they're showing all of the trailers for upcoming movies with, mm-hmm, panels, including their casts, directors, producers, writers.
I saw a lot of those. I have a lot of information on that type of stuff. Yeah.
Excellent.
Very excited.
Frickin-tastic.
So that's what you can expect when you go to Comic-Con.
Now, as for the main floor, I don't think we spent a whole lot of time down in the main floor this time, comparatively. We saw a lot of, like, the panels, a lot of the, you know, information.
Last year we were amateurs. We were interviewing costume people. This
I'd say
year
a full day. Between in there,
yeah,
so,
yeah,
you know.
I spent about 4 hours going through the booths.
I spent 4 or 5 hours, but even then, I mean, that's not nearly enough.
It's a drop in the bucket.
I mean, that's a drop. You know. So I looked at some of the small press. That's really what I was interested in checking out.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to be honest, most of the stuff that you see when you're looking at the small press is god-awful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like ridiculously bad. It's bad art, and it does not look well thought out or put together.
They're
bad writing, bad dialogue.
Trying to get noticed.
Now, yes. Now, I saw one that I thought was really intriguing, though. It was a really interesting concept. I don't remember who put it out, but it was called Scar. And it was about a kid who has a heart transplant, and he starts to suddenly have these weird things happen to him, and he realizes that the heart he had came from a supervillain.
Great.
That's cool.
It was a really intriguing concept. I thought that was just great. I thought it was really it was a little thin in the execution, but it was really a fantastic concept. So that was the one thing that caught my attention.
Very, very cool.
One caught my attention, and I actually bought one book, and I can't find it right now. I was supposed to be right here. But anyway, this one, the art is, it's okay. I mean, it's got that kind of sketchbook look to it. But this one is called Jobnik. And it's a self-pressed single run. This woman's drawing it. She's an American Israeli who went off and joined the Israeli army and then did a comic about it.
Wow.
She's kind of chronicling her time in the Israeli army. And for some reason, it just seemed so different than everything else on the floor. I was like, I think I'll pick up the first issue and just see what it was like. So I haven't been able to read it yet, but it just caught my eye out of all the, you know, cloned super warriors in the future where the Earth has been destroyed. It was like the same thing over and over.
Lots of post-apocalyptic stuff.
A lot of that. I was really surprised by that.
You know, Aaron, that's a really interesting trend that I've noticed starting to happen with comics. It may not be actually even a new trend. I might just be noticing it for the first time. But I did notice recently that there's a comic out there that's basically like my experience with cancer or something like that.
Right.
That was – it looked really good. I mean, it was – you
looks
know,
like a reality comic.
Well, I think, you know, they're, like back
comics are cheap to self-publish, comparatively speaking, to other mm-hmm. mediums. So I think a lot of people are finding they can get a story out in that medium.
See, that doesn't make sense to me. Comics don't sound like they should be easier to make when when you're trying to make something and self-publish. You would think that print would be the easiest thing to do, whereas images are difficult to you know.
I think it's easier to put out an image online and have people pick it up page by page.
Yeah, and read it.
Right.
If you put out prose, I mean, if it's not a subject that people are naturally attracted to,
so what you're saying
they may never touch it.
What you're saying is not that it's easier to distribute. You're saying it's easier to have people find it accessible.
Well, I mean, let's say if it's 16 pages.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's a comic.
That's a comic, as opposed to 300-page novel, which you have to somehow get out to people. I mean,
right.
Okay. But yeah, okay, I'm with you, Peter. I walked around the more independent things, and I almost nothing caught my eye. I mean, there's some things that had some good art. I mean, there was good art here and there, but really the subject matter, I really felt it was the same type of
thing.
Well,
there were two things that I thought were cute. I'm kind of blowing my wad here because these are the only two things that kind of jumped out at me at my time on the floor. The only comic I bought the entire time I was there was Trailer Park of Terror, which is trying desperately to be Tales from the Crypt, kind of redone for the modern time. With
a Trailer Park twist.
Yeah, with a white trash twist. That's the idea.
Wonderful. Like a bunch of different artists on that one.
It was the art was very diverse. It had three stories per comic, and each story reinvented its artwork to fit the story.
Yep.
It was really quite good.
Yeah, there's one that looked like the Edward Gorey stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There was one of them that looked very comic-y.
Comic-y, one film noir.
Right.
You know?
Very quick. I glanced at it. It was very quick. It's a lot of fun, but each story is a little thin. They're not spending a lot of time on the stories, you know. So they're kind of in and out.
Which means I think they're going back to the genre of Tales from the Crypt. You know, the Tales from the Crypt stories were always kind of quick and dirty.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem I have with the Trailer Park of Terror is that some of the stories I read, I agree with you a little too much. Their stories just ended. Like, you know, here's the boiling point. We're done.
Right.
Thank you for coming. But I do recommend it.
And did you said there were two things you saw. What was the other one?
Well, and the other one I saw was a comic called Kid Beowulf. Okay. I actually walked by the stand. It didn't look very interesting to me, but the guy was standing there all by himself, and he's looking around for anybody. And he noticed my press pass, and he's like, "Hey, excuse me. Would you be interested in hearing my pitch?" And I'm like, "No, not really." And he's like, "It's a good pitch." And I'm like, "Okay, you tried. All right, fine, I'll come." So I go over, and he starts pitching his comic, which is Kid Beowulf. It's the young adventures of Beowulf and his evil twin brother, Grendel.
Very interesting.
And
That's cute.
It's a twist on the original story of Beowulf.
And also a twist on the comic of Grendel.
It doesn't even try.
Okay.
Doesn't even try to approach the Grendel comic.
Okay.
But the look of it is very kids, but the writing's content is a little bit more kids and adults. But what was more interesting to me than the comic itself, which actually looked fairly decent once I actually gave it a chance, was the fact that the comic was completely self-published.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't there as part of a larger company. And he was there trying to get a distributor to begin with. He was starting off, and he had just got a booth and was throwing his hat into the ring.
Hmm.
So it was just a good example of someone trying to get started in the comic book industry functionally. And doing it with a little bit of style. So I went ahead and interviewed him, and here is our interview. This is John. I'm on the floor at Comic-Con with a independent producer by the name of Alexis Fajarda. He is the creator of Kid Beowulf. Alexis, would you like to tell us a little about Kid Beowulf?
Kid Beowulf is inspired by the epic poem Beowulf, and it follows the journey of 12-year-old twin brothers, Beowulf and Grendel, as they travel across Europe, meeting the other epic heroes therein, and having high action adventure with comedy. If you're familiar with Asterix and Bone and Usagi Yojimbo, that's the flavor of Kid Beowulf, and it's all ages. First book came out December 2004, and I'm in the middle of book two, which is Kid Beowulf and the Song of Roland.
Excellent. Now, if people wanted to see samples of your artwork, you have a website they could go to?
Yes, kidbeowulf.com. It's got previews from book one and two, as well as production pages of the latest that I'm working on. So that's about chapter four in the second book.
Excellent. So you brought yourself here to Comic-Con. You've brought your own space and everything. What is it you hope to achieve by having your own space here at Comic-Con, the biggest comic book expo in the world?
Well, ideally, I just want to, you know, spread the good word of Kid Beowulf, sell a lot of the books, try and, you know, beat down that big door that is in front of a lot of independent publishers, and trying to, you know, crack the nut of distribution, getting the books into schools, libraries, bookstores. And the more eyeballs that are on Kid Beowulf, the better. The more people who recognize the artwork, that's great. I just want to inform the masses of my little book.
Now, what did you have to do to get this space? Was it difficult? And do you know if anyone else who's brought their own comic here and rented their own space has had a little bit of luck?
Well, I actually got lucky. I'm with Cold Cut Comics Distribution. I originally had wanted a space in Small Press, but they ran out of spots. And at the last minute, they told me a month before that they ran out of space. So I was in a bit of a jam, and Cold Cut Comics, which is one of my distributors, came to the rescue. And they said, we've got some table space. It's in a great location, and it has been. And you'll be sharing it with other independent creators. So I took a gamble and decided to come along, and it's been great so far. Really enjoying it. So
excellent. Well, best of luck, and thanks for spending some time with Geeks On.
My pleasure. Thank you for your time.
Interesting.
Well, Peter and I don't know if you guys stopped by
Phil Folio's.
Folio Studio. Year. I'm a loser.
Doing well without our help.
Yeah, this is the one I probably should have mentioned and didn't mention in terms of, I mean, a comic out there that is actually extraordinary that's not a mainstream press.
Right.
I actually love this comic. We looked at it last year, and I picked up a couple of the books they had, and I became addicted to it.
This is the new one. Genius.
Have you kept buying as the year?
Oh, I've followed along. Yeah. He one of the things he did that's really interesting is they stopped publishing their sort of one-off, the smaller flimsy comics, and now they basically publish up on the internet. Mm-hmm. And you can go and you can follow the story, and I have been following consistently since then, and am obsessed with the storyline.
This is again Girl Genius.
Right? Girl Genius. Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's really clever. It's a completely different world. It's different from anything you've ever seen. It's accessible to guys and girls because the protagonist is a girl. Mm-hmm. I mean, but yet it's just great. You know, it's a great
very
world.
Interestingly, sort of Wizard of Oz steampunk kind of thing.
I love his art style. I always just want to hug all of his characters.
Yep.
And one of our listeners inked that new book there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, and you interviewed him.
Yeah, we did. We interviewed Phil, and we interviewed Cheyenne, who's doing the ink on it now. And why don't we listen to a little bit of what they had to say about their new distribution and how it's working.
Their money-making scheme.
Yes. Okay, this is Peter from Geeks On. I'm here with Phil Folio from Studio Folio, who makes the Girl Genius comics. Last year we were here and we were talking to him a little bit about how he's doing a completely new way of distribution, moving from print distribution up onto the internet, distributing on the internet. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and tell us about how that's been working?
Sure. Also, that's not quite accurate. We still distribute through traditional direct comic channels. Our diamond orders have gone up quite significantly, which is very nice, but we no longer print the small floppy periodical comics. What we do is we put the art up on the web for free, and when we have enough pages, we collect them into graphic novels. And the graphic novels, we sell off our website. We sell through Diamond into the comic book shops that are smart enough to carry us. And we sell through traditional bookstores like Walden's and Dalton's, like that. We also sell through places like Amazon.com.
Now, Girl Genius is something that's very different from anything I've seen out there. I mean, it's a completely different, unique world. I was really kind of shocked. I just got hooked by it almost instantly. It was not something I expected to get hooked by, but I love it. And I think it's something that's really interesting because it crosses into both genres that guys and girls like. I mean, it seems like you'd have a huge girl audience.
We do have a very large audience. I mean, I don't know if it's quite 50%, but it's certainly up there. Luckily, a lot of my work has always had a very high appeal for female readers, and everything that they liked about it pretty much got emphasized in Girl Genius, so, you know, I just got very lucky there. The fact that my wife, Kaya, who is the co-writer, is also a girl, probably helps.
Has anyone contacted you in terms of trying to make this into a film or into a TV show or a commercial, you know, or a cartoon?
Periodically, we get people who are like, "Oh my God, this is just amazing! Why don't you make this into a movie?" And I'm like, "I'm all for it. Anytime, you go right ahead." Hollywood has not approached us, and a few times we've tried to send it off to a packager or something, and they're like, "It's so different that they just don't know what to do with it." I mean, in animation, which I think would be the ideal format for it, the pendulum is kind of swung towards the Cartoon Network. You know, everything has to be contemporary. Everything has to be about kids. Everything has to look like it was designed in the 1950s. And it's like, oh, hat trick, we're out of here, you know? So,
Tell me your messenger story.
Oh, yeah. At the convention here, I had somebody who was like, "Hey, I really like your stuff, and I'm from Hollywood." Oh, don't get too excited, but I'm a messenger. And I'm in and out of every high-powered office in Hollywood, and I got to tell you, I see your stuff everywhere on the shelves. Girl Genius, Buck Godot, Myth Adventures, it's there, and it's in pride of place. It looks like they really like it. Everybody's aware of it. Everybody knows it's there, so who are you cutting deals with? And I'm like, nobody! Nobody! They're just taunting me. I don't know what's going on. So, they're basically looking to see if we crash and burn or waiting for somebody else to express interest, and I don't know. So the answer is no, nobody.
Maybe they're just waiting to see how the story ends.
Oh, well, then they got a long wait.
Well, thank you very much for the interview. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Absolutely. Your show is awesome.
Oh, and if people are interested in the comics, where should they go to look at them?
The comics are updated 3 times a week at girlgenius.net. And it's free.
And I'm sure there are links to where they can buy them as well.
Well, yes, and that costs money. But, yes, once you get to girlgenius.net, we will do everything we can to separate you from your cash.
Great, thank you.
So, what's really interesting, one of the things he said to me was that his sales have tripled since they started only publishing in graphic novels and started letting people follow along on the internet.
So to clarify, you can get the whole comic online, released at a regular, in regular interviews, and then they sell the
collections.
The collection is what they're releasing.
In graphic novels, yeah.
Very cool.
Wow. I think that's smart, though, because if I like something, I want to share it with people.
Yeah.
And
it's a lot more, it's actually sort of a modern day version of like The Shadow or The Phantom back in the old day on the radio shows where you'd listen to it serially. And now you have a chance to actually get the whole thing en masse.
I mean, there are a couple other ones that do that online. I think Sluggy Freelance at sluggy.com does that.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping they sell their books.
They put out all of these individual comic strips online for free. And then once they've gone a long time, they just sell them as a collection.
Now, I don't know how Dork Tower does it, but they have like I think it's a daily.
Yes.
And I think the books they come out with is partly a collection of the dailies.
He does it basically as a Sunday comic or a daily comic, like a Garfield or a Peanuts would do.
Right.
The other one is Goblins, of course.
Oh, I hope Goblins. The Goblins webcomic does that.
You can buy a print copy of that as well, and they're amazing.
It's still a little early, though. There aren't that many of them yet. Now's a good time to go read it for those of you who haven't yet, because it's still early in the series.
Yeah. But they may not actually sell a print copy. They sell a PDF of the entire thing.
Oh, that's even better. For $5, I think it is.
Yeah, and both of these are great.
I'll wait for the hard copy.
We will link to both of them, and in fact, we'll also link. Girl Genius has its own podcast as well, where they do small bits of their episodes, reenacting it.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. So we will link to that as well on our website.
Okay, now Peter and I slid on by AK Comics, which actually hit us up in their press junket. Now, AK Comics really intrigued me because it's a Middle Eastern comic that's been around for years and years and years, and this is the second time that they've made an attempt to come to the United States and actually actually get established. They basically brought it out,
Great timing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They brought it out about 10 years ago, and it completely fell on its face. And now they're bringing it back, and they're trying to... Because what they tried to do is be very generic last time. They just happened to be Middle Eastern. Mm. And this time, they found out that what American audiences really like is get into it. Tell me what it's like if this character is Islamic.
It's true. If you're going to do something like that, you got to commit. Otherwise, you're just another flavor.
So, I agree.
We spoke to their spokesman who knew his stuff, and we actually grilled him pretty intensely, and he told us a little bit about AK Comics.
Hey, it's Matt and Pete here with Geeks On with AK Comics with Derek Gross, or would you, your professional name is?
Well, Derek is the professional name, and Richard is the real name.
Excellent, Richard. So could you tell us a little bit about AK Comics?
AK Comics, in a nutshell, comics about Middle Eastern characters based in the Middle East, bringing them into the concept of the American market. There are four characters. They publish over there once a month, so it's a rotating title. The Middle East, for the sake of our conversation, is Egypt and the immediate territory. We don't expand too far into Persia or over toward Morocco too much. But the comic culture there is light. They are in their enthusiasm and in their development about where we were in the 1960s.
Now, I noticed there's been things like the Spider-Man, which was converted into an Indian audience. What is it about these individual characters that specifically makes them Arabic?
Well, that's a complicated answer. It appeals to the native audience because they're native grown. Everybody likes a homegrown hero. And it was something from what they knew of in comic books hadn't been done before. There have been regional characters in Marvel, like you had one from Israel, one from here, so is DC. But they never hit big-time character status, so they're probably not known over there. These characters having their history, origins of each individual character, beginning in the Middle East, just makes them personal. Why that would appeal over here? It was a shot. We tried it once before in America, and we didn't plan it right, we didn't prepare right, and it kind of fell flat. So we took it back over there, nurtured it, grew it, and promoted it before we arrived here to give some groundwork. And it's caught on. What appeals is the insight to the culture that the stories give without laying it on so thick that it's purely about the Middle East. The Cairo creators, I can't think of the word I want. They watered it down a little bit, made them a little more generic superheroes, thinking this would be the appeal needed to get them to come in. And it's turning out that that's not what the Americans want. They want to see a little more authenticity.
Does the comic address at all the current conflicts that go on in the Middle East, or does it avoid it through the past and through the 75 years in the future?
As a relevant issue of what life is like there, it's imbued. What's going on now? No, because to our characters, it's their past. Because they are in our future, near future. We have terrorists as part of the storyline. We don't identify any particular group or religion, because the whole purpose is the harmony of religions can get along. One is not better than the other. It's just one is yours and nothing more. But we show the religions. You know, there's the backdrop, the temples, the mosques, the people, the wardrobe. It may be talked about, but it's not the thrust of a story, neither are politics.
Thank you so much for speaking with us here on Geeks On. We'll tell our listeners to check it out, all of the comics, and we'll send a link to AK Comics on our website.
Okay. Well, I would like to mention, this is in the independent section, but one of the only full graphic novels I did buy, well, except for Phil's, is the Halo graphic novel came out.
Really?
So I went and bought it. It's a collection of artists and stories.
Pass that around.
Unfortunately, I didn't have the book before I saw the producers of Halo. They were standing right next to me, and the guy was hanging out. Like, they didn't have a spot for him to actually sign, because it's more about the artists.
Did you interview him?
Didn't interview him. He was with his family.
Oh, Aaron.
Didn't have the audio equipment, but Lisa and I found a book, and we said, we got to find this guy, at least have him sign our books. And the next day I didn't want to carry my book around. I go, what are the chances of me seeing this guy again? Hell's high waters. The guy
Dork.
Showed up again. I mean, like, I was killing myself for, you know.
Aaron, he had a crush on you and you didn't even know.
Anyway, so I did get the Halo graphic novel. You know, the art's hit or miss for me, and I haven't read a single bit of it. So I'm,
sort of that watercolory kind of...
Well, it depends on what story you're reading.
Right. It looks kind of Dark Wolf-y to me.
Yeah, it's a little dark.
Anyway, it looks like Aliens Predator comics.
There are different graphic styles throughout it. Different artists, clearly.
Yeah, you know? Different. So anyway, you might want to check it out. I'll report on it later, see if it's any good or not.
Now, another interview we should mention is we stopped by the Spike and Mike sick and twisted
animation. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So we're moving out of the comic book realm now. Do we have any before we move into television?
It's comic, not comic books. It is animation.
Well, let me plug in one quick interview that I did. Okay. It's just one question. Kurt Busiek from Astro City gave a lecture I got to sit in on, and he was brilliant, talking about the writing of comic books, the obligations of a comic book writer, and how to go about doing it. And I had the chance to ask him one quick question, and as he was on his way to his car, I literally wrestled him to the ground, stuck a microphone in his face, and said, "Answer this!" So, here we go. My deep, in-depth conversation with Kurt Busiek. This is Don. I'm with legendary comic book writer Kurt Busiek, master of Astro City. I would just love to know your opinion on what the three hottest comic books of today are. What are your three favorites?
Well, my three favorites and the three hottest aren't going to have anything to do with each other. I'm a huge fan of Usagi Yojimbo. I'm a big fan of Captain America right now with Ed Brubaker writing it. And anything Walt Simonson is doing.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your time. So that was Kurt Busiek of Astro City.
Let's move out of the comic realm.
Dun, dun, dun.
And into the television film realm, I think.
Okay. Perfect.
I think
that's... Well, I do have one more comic book interview we can plug in here, I guess.
Okay.
If we're leaving comic books behind.
Oh, I thought... Keep going.
I didn't know. All right. I had the time to do one more quick interview.
Okay.
Again, finding another poor sap on his way to his car. He dodged, but I'm wide. You can't dodge me.
Okay.
So down he went. I stuck the microphone in the face of the legendary Tom DeFalco, who is a writer, comic book editor for always. Just the guy. Okay. The man. If you know anything about comic books, you know about this man. So here is my in-depth, amazingly deep interview with Tom DeFalco. This is Don. I'm with comic book legend Tom DeFalco. One quick question for you before you go. What do you believe to be the most unfortunate trend in comic books today?
They're not using enough Tom DeFalco scripts.
And done.
Good answer. Yeah, brilliant.
Good, brilliant answer.
Brilliant.
So we also interviewed... Or actually, we're part of a panel with J. Michael Straczynski, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Who, you know, he's...
We're not worthy!
He was damn cool.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, he did Babylon 5. He's writing a Spider-Man.
He did the real Ghostbusters, and he did He-Man Masters of the Universe back in the day.
Mm-hmm. So he's a television writer?
Back when he was
television
OG.
And comic writer.
Television, he originally started with television, and then when he was fantastically successful with Babylon 5, he called up Top Cow Comics and said, "Hi, I'd like to write a comic book." And they said, and someone said, "Please hold." And then someone picked up and said, "Is this really you?" He said, "Yes, yes, it is." He's like, "You want to write a comic book?" "Yes, yes, I do." "Why?"
Yeah.
And it turns out he's just a big comic book fan. That's his favorite media. So he started writing comic books, and now he's making the cross into movies.
Yep. One of the things that that he was talking about is some of the changes he's done with Spider-Man. He has presided over... some really unusual changes in the, I believe it is Amazing Spider-Man, is that correct? Amazing Spider-Man line?
Is he the one that unmasked him?
He unmasked him. Mm-hmm. He unmasked Spider-Man. Spider-Man's taken off his mask in the Civil War part that's going on.
Correct.
He also kind of has been hinting that Spider-Man's powers might be more totemic, that he might be the sort of like totemic avatar of the spider spirit.
Hmm.
But he also, in his conversation, said, look, he said, I
it is what you read into it.
It's what you read into it. I'm not saying that that's what's happening. I'm saying that's something that Spider-Man has been told.
It was very specifically, was he bitten by a radioactive spider and then told that he was, you know, the avatar of all that is spiderhood?
Mm-hmm.
Or was he bitten by a radioactive spider because he was the avatar of all spiderhood to come?
Mm-hmm. Right. So he's also the guy that wrote Rising Stars, which we reviewed in our comics episode, which is a really...
Rising Stars.
Yeah, that's what he said.
I heard Riding Stars.
No. That's something else entirely.
That's... What
comic nice, I'm writing that comic.
Kick ass.
So, but no, Rising Stars. Now, here's some of the news that he told us about what's going on in his life, which I think is pretty interesting. First of all, he just sold a script called Changeling to Ron Howard for a buttload of money.
Yes, he said, I love this quote. He said, I thought I knew what the money truck looked like. He said, I didn't know what the money truck looked like. The money truck backed up, and I went, holy shit, that's the money truck?
And for those, for those of you not in the know, this is the writer in Hollywood who has been the most notoriously screwed financially of any writer.
Yes.
The Babylon 5 series sold something like $500 million worth of DVDs.
And yet it's still...
And his reports from the company still says... That the show's in the red.
That still says it's $10 million in the red.
Keeping that's typical.
In mind that it was made for a fraction of... Wait, how much did he say it was made for?
Yeah, he made $900,000 an episode or something. No. $700,000
The budget for an episode was $700,000
to $900,000.
Right.
That's not what he made.
Right.
At all.
No. But that's ridiculously low compared to, like, Enterprise, which was 1 to 2, right?
Yeah.
So, some of the things he said. He said Rising Stars, Sam Raimi's really interested in developing that.
Mm-hmm.
He's interested in looking at that. He's working on something called Midnight Nation and Dream Police. But the big news is that they came back to him about Babylon 5 and they wanted to do something. He basically said no to a feature film. He doesn't want to. He doesn't have the energy to quite pull that off right now. But
he doesn't
said,
think that there's one in it. He said that unless who comes back to life?
Long story short, the Andreas Katsoulis, I can't pronounce the poor man's name, the man who played Jakar has died.
Right.
Right.
So he doesn't feel the ability to write a Babylon 5 piece without him right now.
Right.
So what he did say, though, was that he would be happy to make some mini-movies, some shorts that expand out things in the universe that he had always hoped to do and never been able to pull off. And he said he'd be happy to do those in sort of an anthology-type style if they said that they would not interfere.
He said, I don't want you to interfere. And they said, okay.
And he said,
wow.
And I want to direct it.
And they said, okay.
And they said, okay. And apparently now he's shooting in September.
Boom, boom, boom.
So
he has full creative control.
Yeah,
full DVD release of these, of what's going to be called Babylon 5, The Lost Tales.
Yes.
Hmm. At this point, Don shook like a bowl full of jelly and then blew up.
Yeah. And someone got up there and said to him at one point in there, I'm your biggest fan? And he said, no, I don't think so. You're more like my average-sized fan.
Yeah, because the guy was like 5'6".
And he said, no, I think that guy is my biggest fan. He pointed to Don,
pointed
and Don
to
stood
Don.
Up and Don waved, and there was everyone clapped. You know, so. And then the last piece of news he said is that he's got a comic that he's working on called One Bullet. And the whole concept of it is...
Sounds so good.
How can one bullet change the whole world? He thinks that...
The Marvel Universe is the example he's using.
The Marvel Universe, but he's talking about how one bullet can change the world as well.
Right.
He said that in today's world, we're seeing situations where, you know, just everyone's getting shot and mowed down, and we're desensitized to violence.
Right. One bullet kills Mahatma Gandhi, changes the world. One bullet kills Archduke Ferdinand, changes the world.
Yes.
You know, so what happens if one bullet, and he very specifically went into a Captain America reference. Mm-hmm. He says, basically Captain America in East Germany being brought up by this super uber scientist who's going to make him into a super soldier.
Captain America is going to save this scientist.
Right.
And he manages to get to the scientist and get the serum from the scientist right before the scientist is assassinated.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So his concept was, what if we move things up and the scientist gets assassinated one day before Captain America can get to him?
Right.
And when the scientist is assassinated,
the bullet shoots
through him and hits Peter Parker's uncle.
Ben Parker,
who's an MP.
Who's an MP. Oh. And so he's never there to raise Peter and teach him how to be a good person before he gets his powers.
Two of the major characters in the Marvel Universe are removed.
Not removed, but
changed. Well, no, Captain America never exists.
No, in his story, you actually described it incorrectly. In his story, Captain America, instead of gaining his powers that way, gets them in an entirely different way.
This is true.
That, you know, he's sort of an Iron Man type of character. He gets these powers, but he knows they're going to kill him at some point.
Yeah, he gets this Chinese super suit, very much like the Iron Man project.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it causes him tremendous amount of pain, and it's slowly killing him.
Yes.
And he knows that this will happen.
And Peter Parker never learns to be a good guy, basically. So we hinted he might be a villain. Who knows? I'm not sure.
He's a big dick. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So, very Spider-Man as dick.
Right.
So that was really interesting.
That was amazing. You know. It was a really, really fantastic.
Apparently, this is a yearly thing, by the way. So if you go to Comic-Con, I recommend that you go to the J. Michael Straczynski lecture, which happens every year. And I recommend you save me a seat.
Yes.
Yeah, you really got to get in there in advance. Now, one thing he said that I just loved is at the end, and this is why I think he's just a lovely human being. He said to everyone, to sum up, he said, okay, the road from where you are out there in the audience to where I am right here runs through your passions. Hmm. You know?
And he's so been working on that line.
Well, it's a good line. He's like, yeah, and I thought that was beautiful, you know, that if you want to be as successful as he is, it goes through your passions. So.
That's great. And he said, and if I can do it, you can do it.
Yeah.
I have a little report on a panel. Hey.
Kayla, stop bothering me. Sorry.
I have a report on a panel I went to. I went to the Dark Horse Indie Film Panel.
Oh, how was that?
They have a new division. Dark Horse has a new division where they're making these independent films really inexpensively.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them very inexpensively. And it was interesting. They had three films that they were pushing. One was called Splinter. And
what's the concept of that?
That one has Tom Sizemore and Edward James Olmos in it. And that one's directed by Edward James Olmos' son.
Okay. What's it about?
It's kind of like a gang street land type of thing.
Okay.
It says here, one on the mean streets of L.A., two gangsters, Dreamer and Dusty, unite over a mysterious murder of their brother. Dreamer, with a bullet that killed his brother, still lodged in his skull, is desperately seeking revenge when he crosses paths with Detective Graham. Anyway, it looks kind of on the streets. It didn't look that interesting, quite frankly.
It doesn't sound very interesting.
I can tell with the way you read it. It was like, yeah, I really like this comic. It's great.
Then there was Driftwood.
They're paying our endorsement fee this week.
Well, then there was, and there's also like a, there's a wrestler in there, something Diamond, something. I can't remember the guy.
Diamond in the Rough.
And he's also in this other movie, Driftwood.
Okay.
This seems like another kind of type of thing. It was a hard, in fact, I can't even remember what it was. Essentially, it's this kid getting thrown into an all-boys correctional facility.
Cool.
And it's all crazy in there. Now, unfortunately, the director is the same director who directed 2001 Maniacs.
Oh no.
Come on now.
Which a friend of ours produced.
Yeah, a friend of ours produced that movie. That director is an idiot. But let me point you to this other film, Monarch of the Moon.
Wow.
This is the cheapest of the three.
Apparently,
done
yeah.
in, like, I think, under $100,000.
Sounds like they paid someone a quarter to write the title.
It's an old recreation of a 1945 serial with the whole Flash Gordon thing. Shot exactly like it. There's no CGI. They did all the little models and comped them in front of all this.
That's great.
Okay, I'll go see that.
America calls on its greatest superhero, the Yellow Jacket, to defeat Japan's deadliest super agent, the Dragonfly, whose organization, Axis, has made an unholy alliance with a sinister Monarch of the Moon. The Monarch's secret intent is to invade Earth and strip it of all its natural resources. America's greatest hero is the only thing that stands between Monarch and his treacherous goal.
Dum, dum, dum.
This guy's battling giant mice in caves and Japanobots, which are these like samurai warring.
Oh, I want to. I'll go watch that. That sounds like fun.
The guys laughing their ass off. It looks funny as hell. It's coming out. I'm not sure if it's going to be released in the theaters, but it's coming out on DVD. They're going to package it with another movie. It's done the same way by the creator that was done several years ago, and the concept of that was that. It, again, they make it look like a faux 1945 film, but this one was a secret propaganda piece to get American men to join the army.
Oh, nice.
But
okay.
The filmmaker, this is all fake, but the filmmaker supposedly ran out of money middle of a film filmmaking, but realized that all of his actors were communists. So he would secretly phone the government. And to get money, he would release a name of his actor to the government, in which they would get whisked off, but he would get a little bit of money for it. And he would slowly sell his actors to make the money or the movie. So by the end of the movie, there's only one actor at the end. So
okay.
Anyway, all these are going to be
That's
packaged
cute.
Together. It's a great idea. I would at least give it a try. Monarch
Wait a
of the
second.
Moon.
I think that might work today.
That sounds like fun. Yeah.
Anyway, that was the
I panel. Think my actor's a liberal.
I went to go see something called The Reaping. Okay, and they mm-hmm. showed some footage of that. It looks pretty interesting. I think it's really neat. The concept of it is it was produced by Joel Silver, directed by Stephen Hopkins, and Hilary Swank is in it.
Okay.
The concept of it is this woman whose job it is to debunk miracles comes to this small town that is being hit by the plagues that hit
Egypt?
Egypt. The locusts, the blood, the frogs, the whole deal. And it's about what happens when she gets here. And we're not really sure what happens from that point on. But from the way people were talking about it, they said the script – they actually – it sounds like the script might be really neat. And okay. What I saw looked interesting.
Yeah.
It is Joel Silver. Now, some of the things that happened while they were...
the town must be populated by, like, bohunk, half-naked auto mechanics and something.
No, it looked very much like the Omen type thing. It looked like it might have a lot of potential. I mean, I'm very intrigued
more
by this.
More subtle and
no,
more styled.
No men in bat suits with stylized nipples?
None of that. No. Wow.
Anybody firing two guns with Ed Harris coming through and saying something very patriotic?
Oddly enough, there was that.
Okay.
No. two little pieces of trivia that I thought were funny or interesting. They were hit by both hurricanes while they were filming this.
Oh, God.
So,
no frogs?
Exactly.
So, right. It's like, you know, there were literally times when they just had no power and they were just out in the middle of, like, the woods shooting. Like, they had to just figure it out. I thought that was, like, an amazing thing to have to overcome. The other thing is that there's this little girl, Anna Sophia Robb, who was from Because of Winn-Dixie. Who is sort of this? She's hinted as if she's sort of an Antichrist type of figure in this, and she was trained.
She was the Antichrist in Because of Winn-Dixie.
Oddly enough, they're typecasting her apparently. So, but Anna was trained by having locusts thrown at her until she didn't flinch. She was covered by locusts. She became.
Because she had to have a scene where she. Didn't
oh, she's always
her.
Yeah. There's locusts all over the place in this film. So yeah, she's got them all over her, and she actually came to like them. She said she's like, yeah, they were like her pets.
Now she eats them like candy.
Now they also saw that they're remaking The Wicker Man. Neil LaBue.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Now The Wicker Man, for those who don't recall, this was it's sort of a classic horror film, and it's classically awful. I mean, it's a horror musical, and it was. I mean, when I saw it, I was kind of shocked by it, But there, it's a very new reimagining. They're turning it from a patriarchal society into a matriarchal society.
It's now set in Pier 1 with the Queer Eye for the Straight Guy guys.
You know, I don't know why they're so hungry for money that they're now going after real shit licenses.
Yeah, I don't know either, but
I mean, it's like, yeah, it's like three brain cells to write a script better than that.
Yeah, it's got Nick Cage as the main guy in it.
he's still pissed off because of Superman.
Ellen Bernstein replaces Christopher Lee, and
why not just shoot Christopher Lee? He's hot.
And what they do on the island in the original is they're raising apples. In this one, they're making honey from bees. So there's a lot of things
that's a great twist. We should make a remake.
Yeah. Well, actually, no, I've got to say, some of the changes that they're making sound like really creepy changes. They showed the opening scene of it, which was great, but I have no idea if it's going to be good or not.
Is this the movie that you showed me where he's riding on the boat over the thing and then there's
I showed you all this.
You showed us
the Irish people sing and then she dances
the original,
naked against the
door. Yeah. The original is the type of thing that is like Mystery Science Theater bad. You should definitely see it with a bunch of friends and laugh your ass off.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Great.
But I'm really curious.
Just don't drive there.
I'm very curious to see what they do
the
with
base,
this.
I mean, if you rip away everything about the first movie,
the basic premise
is very solid.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's very solid.
No, it's completely solid.
Maybe that's it.
And the last thing was in this particular panel, I've got many more after this, but they talked about Superman Returns, and Bryan Singer and Richard Donner came on. Bryan Singer, who directed Superman Returns, Richard Donner, who directed the original.
I love Richard Donner.
And they showed a very funny gag reel. He talked about the 8 months he spent refining the FX, and one of the things that he said was there's a whole Krypton scene where Superman arrives at Krypton that he pulled out at the last minute.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And he was saying that he was not intending to put it onto the DVD. When it comes out as an extra. So I'm very curious to see what happens about that.
Did you guys see some of that? Did they show some of the...
They showed a lot of stuff, but they didn't show that.
Oh, they didn't.
Okay.
That would have been the only thing that actually made it not into the same movie as the first Superman movie.
One of the things that Richard Donner talked about was after he made the first one, he was filming the first one and the second one
at the same time,
and they started to run behind. So he shifted all of his attention over to the first one.
Correct.
And his great line was, in typical Hollywood fashion, after the first one became a huge success, they took me off the second one and gave it to someone else.
Yes.
So
Saul Kinds hated him.
Because they had filmed some stuff that had just never been made. I mean, you'd never been edited together, never been whatever. They actually were able to take some of the old footage that he shot in a scene that was not, that was cut out of the second one and edit it together. And I got to tell you something. When I watched this, I was just... Christopher Reeves was such a comic genius. I had forgotten how good he was as Superman.
He's good.
I mean, he was amazing in what he did. And it just was so amazing how it blew out...
Nice.
Blew the socks off of Superman Returns in terms of
the acting.
Now, so good.
Did I hear that there is going to be a re-edit that's being released?
What, of the original Superman?
Yeah, of the...
Of Richard Donner's?
Yeah, of the second film.
I don't think so, because there's a lot of stuff that's missing that they don't know where it is. And he never shot the whole thing. He only shot a bit of it.
Well, so. I heard he shot a big bit
He
of
shot
it.
The half. He shot the first half, and then they got into the money conversation, and they kicked him off of it.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's why the stuff at the beginning of the movie is actually some of the worst stuff in the movie. Like her punting the guy on the moon, when, the three Kryptonians standing on the moon. And
that
like,
was reshot.
Yeah, that was all reshot, and they're talking to it. Yeah, it's just horrific. Yeah.
So, I actually don't remember that.
Yeah. I don't remember that either. So, okay, so moving on. Do you had a couple more?
I went to the Fox Studio panel. Did you go to that one?
Which one was that?
That was the one with Aragon and Pathfinder.
Nope, didn't see that.
Well, all the major studios, Fox, Sony, Paramount, I don't know if Universal is there, they all have big conference or big panels there where they talk about some of their upcoming bits that were at least semi pertaining to Comic-Con. And Fox was the first one I went to, and they start out with Aragon. I don't know if any of you guys have read the book.
The book's actually pretty cool. I'm about a quarter of the way through it.
Which is, to bring people up to date, I believe it's the fantasy novel written by a 17-year-old.
He's young. I don't know if he's 17.
Yeah, I think
that was
really
the big deal. He's 16 or 17 years old.
Right. It's about a little farm boy who finds a dragon egg. So, anyway, they showed a little trailer, so we got to see a real small glimpse of a dragon, which looked, cool. I mean, CG, they can do dragons these days. And they showed some scenes and all that. It looked like it was promising. I mean,
is Jeremy Irons in this one?
Jeremy Irons is in that, and
yes.
So is...
hopefully not being like Dungeons & Dragons again.
Yeah.
Ugh.
My clothes are clean!
They got some good people in here, so I don't know. It looked promising.
And I am the root of all evil!
I saw some of the scenes with him in it, and he seemed okay.
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 So did it look good?
It looked okay. It was really,
can't tell.
It was really hard to tell. They didn't have much of it edited together. In fact, the trailer was kludged together just for Comic-Con. There's not really a trailer out there, so they tried to eke out just something for us. So it looked like it had potential, looked like large scale, looked like they're throwing some money at it, looks like they've got some great actors. It looks like it's heading in the right direction.
It's the Aragorn franchise is confusing to me because the people that I have met that have read the books are never really that excited about them. They're like, yeah, it was good. Yeah.
Well, I think it's one of those things where it was good for a 17-year-old boy.
Right, but I mean, now they're sinking serious money commitments into this franchise, not just the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of money is going to something that seems that excited about.
Kids have been eating it up.
Have they?
Yeah, how many kids do you
talk
to?
I must be talking to the wrong age group.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but come on, Harry Potter? You know, most of the kids' books these days that make a splash, Lemony Snicket's, Harry Potter, they cross over.
How many people talk about Cars? The movie Cars. That's one of the biggest franchise sellers right now. And nobody has... I haven't heard anybody who said that was a great movie.
I have.
Well, really? Anyway,
I haven't heard...
It's supposed to be pretty
good. Is it still out? The other movie that they talked about that was worth mentioning is Pathfinder. This is... I don't know exactly if this is taken directly from a graphic novel, but they got graphic novel artists to visualize this movie. Viking boy left behind after a clan battles Native American tribe. It's essentially the
same.
Oh,
that's interesting.
The guy, the filmmaker, wanted to do kind of a, you know, Dances with Wolves type of thing, but all those stories been taken up.
What if a Viking?
Yeah,
ended up
it's the same freaking story. It's like white kid left behind, and then he gets grown up. But you know, it's the same bullshit. But it looks like it has a very strong visual style.
Random Man Named Horse. It's a great film.
Same type of deal. But this is bloody, super action battles, and it's got the Kurgan's in it from Highlander.
Nice.
Great.
Now, here's the weird thing.
I know his name.
There's no English in it.
All right.
It's all subtitled.
Oh, wow.
They all use, like, you know, dead Nordic languages. And he said there's only, like, 10 lines in the whole movie, so it's kind of like Quest for Fire, too, I guess.
Oh, God.
Interesting.
Oh, no.
So, anyway, they also showed a couple of other films. Who's the guy who does Ali G?
L.E.G.
Yeah, L.E.G. Yeah.
He has that Kazakhstan character. There's a movie coming out that looks like it could be really freaking funny.
Well, he's really
but also
funny.
Foul. Oh. Like, some stuff is just out of control. They showed a clip that some people almost walked out of, but I was laughing so hard I thought I was going to die.
Well,
anyway,
as long as it isn't Freddy Got Fingered, we're just fine.
The other thing that someone might be interested in, they mentioned that when the X-Men 3 DVD comes out, it's going to have 3 alternate endings tagged onto it.
Yay!
Anyway,
now it will suck 3 times
as much. Can I tell you how much I hate that? All that means is that nobody could make up their mind.
Exactly.
No. You know, nobody felt so strongly about an ending that they thought it was good.
And what controversial ending that they feel like they had to do a safety for?
Yeah, right. Seriously.
All it means is that it's X-Men as Clue. No, I think that the Phoenix did it in the house with Dr. Xavier.
Well, that was it for Fox for me.
That's how it could have happened.
Well, speaking of alternate endings,
really happened.
I saw a panel where they had Final Destination 3.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Which is probably going to be awful. But one of the interesting things about it is that throughout the film, you get to vote on different things that the character will do.
It's choose your own adventure?
It's choose your own adventure, and you can change the course of who lives and who dies throughout the film.
So it's going to be DVD only?
I don't know if it's DVD only, but obviously it's more accessible in DVD. I don't know how they'll do that in a theater by any means.
The girl with the big boobs.
They'll pause, go out into the audience, and take a vote.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea.
It sounds like a DVD thing, but that's kind of cool.
I thought that was interesting.
I like that idea.
They talked about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning.
Oh,
but
God.
It was,
let it die. Let it go.
It was so violent they couldn't actually show any clip from it, they said.
Just let it go.
Wow. Which I was, frankly,
just
as happy.
They're making money off
it.
The damn thing.
They showed Tenacious D in The Pick of Destiny.
Well, that's fun.
And they showed this opening sequence to it, which was a very funny prologue musical. It was hysterical. But I'm not going to say the rest of it's going to be as good. You never know with that type of thing, but it was very funny.
It's Jack Black. Hmm.
And then...
Uh-oh. Peter's excited.
They came to Snakes on a motherfucking plane!
Woo! Oh, wait, so this was a... What studio was this?
I have no idea. I wasn't... New Line, I think, isn't it?
Yes, it's New Line.
New Line?
Okay. Yeah. Okay, now I
think I think Snakes on a Motherfucking Plane needs to be our next Geeks on Radio script.
That's okay. Not a bad idea.
Well, I have to throw in a little bit of nuanced knowledge about Snakes on a Motherfucking Plane.
Okay.
I did an audition for Snakes on a Motherfucking Plane after Snakes on a Plane had been already shot.
Yeah, right? They reshot.
They had shot the film. It was done. But they realized they had never explained why the snakes were on the plane at all. So,
what?
Exactly. So I went in to audition for this character who was supposed to be the shady guy explaining why there were snakes on the plane. So I had three sets of lines which I had to explain. The first one was, yeah, we got the drugs. The plane will go down over so-and-so area. The snakes are going to go crazy. I sprayed the pheromone all over the seats. Okay. Right? The second one is, she's in witness protection. We've got her. Nobody's ever going to know. I sprayed pheromone everywhere. The snakes are going to go crazy. Mm-hmm. And the third one is, I've got some crazy snakes on this plane. We've got the girl. She's dead. Don't worry about it. So what I think they were leaning towards is witness protection.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. That's what I've heard.
And
did you sign a DNR?
No.
Okay.
Great. So they showed, sort of a trailer of stuff they put together.
Wait a second, a DNR? You mean a DNR is do not resuscitate.
NDA.
NDA. Yeah. No, Aaron, I want to be resuscitated.
No, we have you on tape now saying no.
No, I did not sign.
Keep going, Peter.
So, I mean, this is like great awful. I mean, yeah. I'm not going to say this is going to be a good movie, but I think it's going to be a fun movie.
Yeah, I mean,
but
obviously.
It's high grade cheese.
Yeah, it's like.
Really?
So,
it's going to do so well. Yeah. And then they're going to try and make schlock films because I see a return to the 80s.
Yeah, it's going to be like Wombats in a Jeep next.
Yeah.
So Samuel Jackson was there.
And then, Samuel Jackson came out himself.
Right.
They asked him a couple things. They said, what's it like to be such a badass motherfucker? He said, I don't know that I'm really such a badass motherfucker myself, but I do play one often. They asked him a couple of questions. They said they brought out a bunch of snakes, and you can see pictures of it on our website.
Because they had the snake wrangler there.
They had the snake wrangler there. They asked him how many snakes there were. He said there were 450 at the start. By the end, there were 500 snakes. Because when you get snakes together, more snakes come out.
Let's get it on.
Ew.
Why do I feel like there was this boa sidling up to like a garter snake?
So one guy came up, and he said... now, you guys made me promise to try and do this in a Samuel L. Jackson voice.
Impersonation.
All right, come on. Peter.
This is going to be awful.
Wait a second. Wait. Shh. Peter as Samuel L. Jackson.
It's going to be awful. But so one person said, would you ever consider working with a first-time director? And he said something along the lines of, you got a checkbook? And if you've got a checkbook, anyone who's got a checkbook, I'm happy to work.
You got to do it in line.
So then what he said to him is he looked at the guy, he goes, sounds like you got a film, but you don't have a checkbook. You got a sister? What's your mama? What about your mama? What's your mama look like?
Nice.
So,
wow.
Then someone said, are the snakes' behavior realistic in this film? He said, we checked with snake experts all over the motherfucking planet, and they said that's exactly what they're like. Of course, being
especially
facetious. And then he said, yes, they deserve to die. I hope they burn in hell. I mean, he's talking about the snakes.
Oh, sorry.
That's pretty good, Peter. Pretty good. That's
someone
pretty
yelled good, out, let's see the snake in your pants. He demurred. So I hope I don't get too much hate mail from that.
There was a lot of snakes on a plane. Yes. Stuff going on the floor.
Yeah.
Giant snakes you walk into the mouth of, and they had like trailers. They had.
We got to get the guy that did the Samuel Jackson to go over my voice and do it instead because he's way better.
Call up Don and have him come in and do
Samuel
Jackson.
Just over the phone.
All right. What else? You guys
come in right here.
Panels? I've got some more.
If you've got another movie, go on and I'll bring a couple more in.
I went to the Paramount Studios panel. Listen to me, Paramount. If you're going to go and sit in front of 2,000 people waiting to see what you've got hidden, what you're going to release to the world, woohoo! Please make it exciting. Please get your shit together and get your audio-video things to work and Get your audio in sync so that the lips match with the voice.
What is it, like Singing in the Rain, where it's like, no, no, no.
This was a pile of crap. They were showing Stardust, which a lot of people are very excited
about. I actually was super excited about.
Yeah, Neil Gaiman's one.
Yeah, I never would have thought of this as a film when I read the book.
Mm-hmm.
And but yet, I loved what I saw up there. I mean, you know, they showed a couple clips.
They showed raw footage right out of the camera of this guy like asking a girl if she wants to go on a date.
Please prep for rent.
Yeah, but I was charming. I don't know why you didn't like it.
It was the most dreadful, boring panel. Now, the movie might be great. They've got some great actors in it. It looks like they're throwing a lot of money at it. Looks like the film looked beautiful as far as the actual images they're catching on there. So the poor film could be amazing, but the excitement of the panel, the information they were giving out was dreadful. They needed a front man to pitch this movie to us because if I were going to choose the films to go to based only on Comic-Con excitement, that would be on my bottom.
You know, what's interesting, though, is I had the exact opposite reaction. I'm very excited about this film. It could be a new Princess Bride, as far as I'm concerned.
Where would you have gotten that information? From that one thing where the kid looks up in the window and says, would you like to go on a date?
Oh, wait, you might have gone to a different panel. There were tons of clips I saw. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was the majority of an hour that they went on showing clip after clip after clip.
It was all
saw bad. Robert De Niro, Michelle Pfeiffer's in it. I mean, it looks really intriguing.
Who's De Niro playing? The dad?
He plays the captain of the storm ship or whatever it is.
Yeah, the sails guy.
The sailors. And Michelle Pfeiffer's the witch. Huh. Who was
Jarvis or whatever from The Office? Is that what his name?
Well, who was the girl that was...
Oh,
yeah, she better be pretty pretty.
No, she isn't. She's, what's her face?
Really? The woman he'd sell everything, you know, in a day for?
Winona Ryder.
It's
the star.
Claire Danes.
Claire Danes. Ah. She's pretty.
Really?
Yeah, she's
no,
next door.
She's okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
He also mentioned in the middle of this that they're also making, of his films, Coraline. It's stop motion.
That's interesting.
Yeah. They're making Beowulf, which has Angelina Jolie in it.
And directed by Terry Gilliam, right?
Terry Gilliam, I believe.
Isn't that okay. The one?
Yeah, and it's animated a la Monster House or Polar Express. So,
I think that's the Terry Gilliam one.
Yep, he described
so
it as
full rotor motion, full. Yes. We don't need actors; we just need voiceover.
He described it as cheerfully violent, which is
that sounds Gilliam.
So, so do you want to go on?
That was it for Paramount for me.
Well, there was some news that it came out in kind of a lame way, but it was interesting. Transformers has signed Peter Cohen, the original voice of Optimus Prime, to do the Optimus Prime voice.
That kicks ass.
That is great. Yeah, for those of you know.
That's because he was busy.
Kicks ass.
Well, no, but it's great.
He does a lot of voiceover.
Look. For people who loved the cartoon, it's great to have that same voice.
Come on,
it
if
together.
You heard,
well,
yeah, come
it wasn't
on,
like
well,
it was scoring some.
But you know,
Aaron,
in the modern climate, though, come on, you know they're going to go out and get a celebrity most of the time.
Okay, you're right.
And Brad Pitt is Optimus Prime. No, please.
Why don't you just exactly?
No.
Wouldn't you be like, oh, come on, just get the guy who did the original voice?
You know, there is really horrible rumors that they're going to be like iPod. Transformers and all that stuff in this movie too.
Oh, it's gonna make a resurgence.
Every single one of those cars is gonna be a brand name.
Yep.
You know.
I mean, oh God,
an iPod,
it's gonna be the BMW Transformer.
Oh my God, I just realized you're entirely right.
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
So I went to the Jim Henson Dark Crystal 2 panel.
No way.
I didn't hear about that.
I actually had a choice. Go to the Snakes on the Plane, which everybody wanted to go to.
And everybody loved.
Or go to Dark Crystal 2 that nobody knows anything about and get some great little bits of information.
Woohoo!
I went to the Dark Crystal 2.
Uh-huh.
And it was not very good. They didn't say anything about Dark Crystal 2 besides that it's going to have puppets in it.
Okay.
And so the CG won't be in the puppets. The CG will be combined with other more traditional ways
will it be
for
combined
the backgrounds.
With the, oh.
Okay. So there'll be more CG environments with puppets in them.
That's acceptable. I think that might be interesting.
But that's kind of the only thing we got. The rest of it was about Jim Henson's studio. They've got some products coming out with, like, you know, flip-flops and backpacks.
That sucks.
And they also had the one thing that they're developing a show or have developed a show. I'm not sure if it's even out yet. It's this puppet improv show or group. It's just like done like an improv Olympics.
Okay.
But the actors have puppets. So they have kind of like two cameras. They have the camera trained on the stage where you can see the actors and everything. And then they have a little camera, a little tight focus camera, which the puppets, you know, play in front of. And they'll go to the audience and say, okay, we've got these three puppets. They're in an interview, and they're being interviewed about throw some name out. And just like, you know, Improv Olympics, the audience throws, you know, things out.
Oh, wow.
And then they these puppets do the improv. And that was actually pretty funny. They showed a little clip of that, okay. And that seemed interesting. But as far as Dark Crystal 2 information... Nothing.
Nada. Niente.
They had nothing. Even though it was on the panel thing, they really had nothing
it's
to say.
It's still probably a ways off.
They haven't shot a single thing for it.
Is Brian Froud still alive?
Don't know.
Brian Froud did the original art design for it, did the Fairies book.
Oh, I think he was there on the panel.
Oh, I would have loved
it. He didn't have much to say. But anyway.
Rats.
So that was really the only thing from that panel.
Shall we hit a little TV, or
no,
are you
no,
guys
no,
done?
No, one more.
Oh,
one more.
Wow. Okay.
So I went to one that I was actually – I'm terribly excited about this.
Okay.
Pan's Labyrinth by Guillermo del Toro. Okay. Ooh. Guillermo del Toro, director of Hellboy, for those who don't remember. He's also done a lot of bad stuff too, but Hellboy I thought was pretty good.
And he's mm-hmm. a hell of an actor.
Is he actor as well?
Yeah.
Guillermo del Toro?
Yeah.
Didn't he win an Academy Award?
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't know that either.
I did not know that.
I thought he was Mumbles in
No. That's
you're not getting Benicio
del Toro. I'm getting confused.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. No, Guillermo del Toro is a director.
Sorry.
Entirely different.
Matt confused, mea culpa.
So Pan's Labyrinth, which is interesting because he basically said, you know, I'm going to say fuck you to the studios. I'm going to go and I'm going to make something in Spain in Spanish. And it's not English. It's going to be subtitled when you see it, so I can have complete creative control because I'm getting really sick of this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
it's kind of like a spaghetti western.
Yep. So basically, his concept is
more like a paella.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay.
Keep going.
So his concept is it's about this girl during I believe it is World War II, and you know basically she starts to see fairies, I think it's just after the war in fascist Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about her sort of dealing with her life, and she starts to see fairies and what's going on. And it was they showed some clips. It was great.
Hmm.
What I saw was really interesting. All I saw was visuals, obviously, because it's for an American audience and they're trying to make it, you know. But what I saw looked lovely, and I'm very excited about it. Now, a couple of things that he said something that we've often espoused. He said horror and fantasy are genres that are often far more relevant than other genres, yeah. You know, because you –
They bring up complicated topics.
You can tackle these complicated topics because you've got the veil of the unreal
mm-hmm.
to
right.
allow you to do that. So he said that this is very different than what's come before, and at the same time, it's the culmination. He said, I hope this is as with Dogs when finally my balls drop, which I thought was hysterical.
Excellent.
Okay. It's the first movie he's written, produced, and directed.
Hang on. Don's still thinking about it.
So,
okay, Don.
Okay, you got it.
Let's see. Some other things that he said. He said that when you make a film, you need to have vision, faith, and balls. He likes balls.
He's got a ball thing.
Yep. He said that...
did you give him the Nudicles website?
I did not give him the Nudicle website. Doug Jones was there. He's the guy who played the fish guy in Hellboy.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, who's done a lot of acting.
Who did the body.
So David Hyde Pierce did only do the voice.
Did only do the voice. And if there's a sequel, he's been promised he'll be able to do the...
body as well.
Yeah. The voice as well.
Oh, the voice as well.
Yeah.
Doug Jones.
Doug Jones will get his voice. He said, for once, I'd like to do a character where I don't have to research him at the zoo. he plays Pan in this one.
Oh,
so,
oh, really?
You know, yeah. And he hinted that, you know, some of the rumors might be true about him becoming the Silver Surfer. You know, he
that?
Hinted. very subtly.
Would be schlick.
Very subtly. I mean, you know, he came out wearing a very shiny shirt, for example. You know. But
schlick.
Am I the only person that's just not excited by the concept of a Silver Surfer movie?
I don't care.
I'm not that excited, but
couldn't
you never
care
know.
Less. You
well,
know?
It's I
it's
don't
the
know.
Lamest character I can think
he
of.
He's
I don't
lame.
Know
you're
how
correct.
You make it accessible, because Silver Surfer is really, I mean, unless it's done by Bruckheimer, Silver Surfer is about blowing big shit up. So, I mean, worlds. So,
well, another one that's, you know, Ghost Rider is another one that I'm not sure how they're going to pull off, and I'm looking forward to see if they can actually do
it's
it.
Not gonna be.
I think
it's
Ghost
not
Rider
be.
Is more believable to me. Like, it's
that's but, human still, at least.
Yeah, it's the whole Headless Horseman thing. It's, you know, it's yeah. kind of archetypal, sort of.
We'll see.
But the Silver worried. Surfer thing, it's like, wow.
He
it's a celestial extreme sports guy.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Hey, did you see him rail Saturn?
That oh, was- he totally coasted that cosmic curl.
That was awesome.
Totally. It was like, dude.
Rock.
Dude.
So, Magneto totally snaked
dude.
Me.
Right.
Any other? Any,
a couple other things oh. he said. He talked about working with actors in makeup and how difficult it is. A lot of times actors don't know how to calibrate their acting for makeup, which is really interesting and an intriguing concept. But one of the things he said is he's also working on something, Mountains of Madness, based on the H.P. Lovecraft story. And he said that if you saw the sketches, you would cry and jerk off in a corner until you die. Hopefully we'll have a lot of tentacle goodness. So,
I mean, the first American hentai movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to see a really well done H.P. Lovecraft film.
Maybe. Yeah.
I really would love
capital
to see
M, well, maybe. He talked about some of the problems with that. He said that Lovecraft is the biggest user of the anti-adjective, the unfathomable, the unspeakable, the unnameable.
Right.
And he said, you know, when you look at how pissed off people get when you try and take like a character we know, like Wolverine, and put him up on the screen, you know, and whether or not people, you know, is that really the Wolverine from your mind?
Yeah.
Do they hit it? And these are characters that are drawn out, that are sketched. You see what they look like. They've already got, you know, there's a lot of stuff that tells you. And he said, with this, it's really, that's one of the problems and the
it
difficulties.
It's true, but I believe that people have in the past kind of nailed down what some of these things that are, you know, like we kind of all know what Cthulhu
is. I've seen
was.
Lots of Cthulhu movies that got something right, but rarely a mix of everything.
If
right,
they did it
know?
with the evilness being kind of like the way they originally did the evilness in the Lost series,
mm-hmm.
where it's like always this thing that's on the edge of your vision that's
yeah,
going to
yeah.
bust your ass, that'd be great. But like, remember the end of Hellboy? Tell me that wasn't Cthulhu.
Yeah, pretty much. It was Cthulhu. Absolutely Cthulhu, and it was.
Yeah.
But it was one of the parts that was the least interesting, actually, out of it too. You know,
well,
because they always make them. It's a Hollywood movie, so they want to show the bad thing because they can make the bad thing now.
Yeah.
But the problem is the bad thing's never as scary as what you can make up
yeah.
in your head.
Give it to Ridley Scott a la you know? Alien.
I still think the Necronomicon movie, the first, it was like three short stories again.
Oh, I never saw that.
Mm-hmm.
I actually recommend it. Hmm. I don't think it's a brilliant movie by any stretch of the imagination, but each of the three stories they tell got something right about the H.P. Lovecraft mythos.
Hmm.
In the first one, they nail it. In my opinion, they get it right
mm-hmm.
up until they show the monster.
Right.
And they show the monster. And
yeah.
they should
don't do it. Once you make the monsters, I mean, the thing is that I've always noticed with these horror films is if you make the monster a destruction of the human form, a la the Clive Barker things, mm-hmm. then it really, really, really freaks the hell out of people.
In the Mouth of Madness did
yeah.
that. You know?
You know?
They did a great job
with
that.
But as soon as it goes too alien, it's like, oh, it's a squid. It's a, you know, we
yeah.
try and find something.
Well, H.R. Geiger's stuff was pretty
yeah.
scary, but it's hard to, you know.
It was very organic. It's
yeah.
very true.
Yeah. Now, he said that the Pale Man sequence in this film is the scariest thing he's ever done. So I'm
okay.
curious to see.
All right.
Well,
I'm ready.
All right.
I'm ready for the scariest thing I've ever seen. I'm done with movies. Should we move on?
Should we hit some TV and
do a little bit of TV
stuff?
And then wrap it up?
Excellent. Okay. So basically, Peter and I went to Spike and Mike's Sick and Twisted Films.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, basically, they've done things like Don Hertzfeld's short films. They've done a lot of things like Dr. Tran.
I love Dr. Tran.
Yeah.
I love Dr. Tran. Go to YouTube. Go
Happy,
look at Dr. Tran.
Happy Tree Friends
right,
is in there.
G4.
Yeah. That's all within this Sick and Twisted. So we interviewed these two girls who were promoing Spike and Mike's.
Were they
good looking?
One was extremo good looking.
There are pictures on the website.
Oh, okay.
Oh my gosh.
And the other one wasn't, but she was.
She's the one that's got the more interesting, not intriguing.
She's the one who switches accent. You're going to listen.
So they have the cool one and the pretty one.
Yeah. The cool one, Daria, I like to refer to her in my mind.
Actually, oddly enough, the pretty one was kind of cool, too.
Yeah, she was kind of cool, but she switches accents here because she thinks she's putting on a character.
Yeah.
And her voice doesn't change whatsoever.
And her voice doesn't change at all.
I mean, like, a little bit, but it's clearly, like...
Yeah, it's still
nice.
Hard.
Nice.
Hey, it's Matt here with GeeksOn.com, and we're in front of Spike and Mike's Sick and Twisted Animation. We're here with Michelle and Cassie, and they're going to tell us a little bit about Spike and Mike's.
Hi, yes, Spike and Mike's is indeed Sick and Twisted. We have the filthiest, most disgusting DVDs. I'm going to put Fran on the line in just a second. Hi, my name's Fran, and oy vey, these DVDs are just so filthy, so disgusting. Disgusting. I was schwitzing in my seats. Oy, gewalt. Ugh. Well, anyways. But there's this cute little fella, Dr. Tran. Yes, we got the DVDs. They're like these little silver round things. I use them as a coaster, but some people watch this animation thing on it. Well, anyways, he's a cute little fellow, and he just gives me, ugh, the goosebumps. Ugh.
What's your favorite thing that you've seen on Spike and Mike?
I have to say I am a fan of Dr. Tran. Short Asians are my favorite.
Thanks. I appreciate that, actually, more than you could know.
It's Fran or Michelle.
What's your favorite?
My favorite. Personally, I actually like, favorite of the Sick and Twisted.
Yeah, of the Sick and Twisted.
Forget the title of it. It's actually on the classic DVD. It's My Cousin, I think it's called.
All right, what's the sickest one that's absolutely made you guys run away from the television?
Happy Tree Friends.
Yeah, Happy Tree Friends is really bad. When you see a cute little Cuddles bunny get his eyes punched out by a razor-sharp mountain, you just
can't go there. That's it. That's done. Thank you guys so much for being on the show. Really appreciate it.
It is Sick and Twisted.
Come see us.
Come visit us now. Right now.
Well, I gotta say, I love the part where she says that she finds short Asians attractive.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
What's that? See, I went by that booth and she told me tall Polynesians.
Yeah, that was off air though.
So
she was public with our love.
I didn't see that much television. I mean, there were television things. I didn't see anything that really caught my eye. So
they put out a bunch of flyers and stuff that they handed, but we have no idea what they're about.
The Lost panel was pretty amazing.
Oh, you
I saw the end of it.
Oh, okay.
And I saw a crazy, freaky woman basically boink off the walls. And what she did was she basically came out and went in during the question section, started going, you know more than it is, and this really happened, and there's really an island, and you know, and you people. And what it sounded like was like...
Someone paid her to do it?
It sounded like somebody paid her to do it. Mm-hmm. It sounded like bad community theater. So either she was doing it on a dare and was, you know, had her whole thing planned, or it was a plant.
Yeah, but if it was a plant, you don't think they would have found somebody who could do it more convincingly?
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, they got enough money to throw at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
You know, my buddy Dan, who we're going to try and get on the show, was there, and Hurley was there, and they actually got mobbed, and people were running upstage, can I hug you?
Ugh.
And it was...
This is one of the things that they do at the Comic-Con, and it's really kind of lame, but consistently people will come up and say... You know, I just wanted to know, can I have a hug? Or, I just really came up because I wanted to get closer to see what you actually look like up close.
Yeah, I'm like, you just wasted 5 minutes of my time.
Now I'm up close, and this is great. I'm really excited to be here and seeing you up close because this is great to see you up close and stuff.
Yeah.
And then there was one guy, this was actually kind of funny. They came up to Samuel Jackson. They said, my friends and I want to know if we could actually create a human throne for you to sit on while you're up there. And Samuel's like, yeah,
next question.
I'm going to have to pass on that one, but thank you. I really maybe next time. Yeah, that's something that happened.
We also
don't be an idiot.
Yeah.
We also saw the end of the Briscoe County Jr. Panel, which was Briscoe County. Yeah, it's off the air, but it's got a huge following.
Yeah, like right now, the whole thing is they just released it on DVD.
Yeah.
And as we record this, it's number 2 on Amazon.com.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's had a bit of a resurgence.
I mean, doing unbelievably well. It's $98 for their big old box set of their first season.
I was surprised that the sheer number of people there that were just begging for a new comic version. television.
Yeah.
You know, something to continue it.
People, yeah. I mean, maybe it deserves a watch because people were like, please, God, let me get more of this show.
The biggest comparison that people kept making was to Firefly.
Yeah.
So
they
I'm
said
curious.
It was the best show that got canceled, just like Firefly. So.
Who knows?
Anybody else got any
plenty
more?
Plenty of awesome shows have been canceled out there, people. Come on.
Anybody got any more TV stuff?
No TV stuff. I have just a quick two little things. I saw demoed the Battlestar Galactica collectibles card game.
And yeah. You bought it.
And I bought one pack just to see how it was. But we saw a listener found me. I think it's Brian. I was walking along. Brian?
Yeah. Brian in Munich?
Brian from Toronto, or from Canada, Ontario, Canada. I was wearing my Geeks On t-shirt, and I assume that he recognized the t-shirt, and I heard my name. I turned around and was like, yes? So he was getting demoed the collectible card game. It seems interesting, so I bought a pack just to see how it
went. I want to know why the Apollo in a towel card beats everything else.
What?
Yeah, it just does.
And then I would like to mention Jerry Korick. Jerry Korick is a guy... of course, there's all sorts of booths there you can buy things from. He set up this giant game store, essentially. He's the owner of Adventure Retail. He's a rep for Atlas Games, Steve Jackson Games, all that. Mm-hmm. And he has had all sorts of great games there, even older ones, Steve Jackson. I mean, everybody was there. And I went up to him. I said, hey, I see you're a rep for Steve Jackson. I bought an original fourth edition of GURPS, and it fell apart the first week I had it. Like, the binding just broke. You know, what should I do? And he said, here. And he just takes a book right off the shelf and says, you can have that. So...
That's lovely.
So the guy, I said, really? Do I need to send you the book, you know, the book back or anything? He goes, nah. You know, I that did happen to some of the books. We've heard that before, and I trust you, so here you go. So I don't know if he took a loss. I don't know if he's calling up Steve Jackson, saying I need, you know, $15 or whatever. But the guy was really good, so we're going to put a link to his website. You can buy almost any freaking game you want on the planet from there. It's got a big catalog. Anyway, check him out. Also, I saw a place that you can design your own dice. You send them line art, and they'll print whatever symbol you want on each side of the die. So if any of you game makers want custom dice done a la Memoir 44 or Runebound,
you can do it,
and it's not very expensive.
We should do Geeks On Dice that has our faces on each side of the... We could do a four-sided die.
And that's how we'll solve...
Which of us is the
botch? Eight-sided. Yeah.
Eight-sided die?
Eight-sided, because well, there's four of us. If you do a...
We can do a four-sided die.
We can do a four. What am I thinking?
Well, no, we have Lisa.
Oh.
But we can roll it to solve arguments.
Exactly.
You just roll the die and was right.
Sorry, Aaron is right. We've rolled a die. I think that's genius. I think that is absolutely genius.
Well, one last thing I wanted to add to the show is they did a panel where for the last 4 or 5 years, these two guys have been asking people at the conventions what the top 10 sci-fi films of all time are.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally have published a book on it. And I thought it was very...
So it's the Comic-Con crowd who's giving up this...
The top, yeah, 10 top sci-fi, yeah, films of all time.
So number 10 is Aliens.
Aliens.
Okay. Number 10. Great. Okay.
Number 9 is The Matrix.
Okay.
I wouldn't make it better than Aliens, but okay.
Okay.
Well, the first one.
You know, he said that interesting tidbit about The Matrix is it was one of the first films where the directors had a contract saying that they didn't have to do press.
Hmm.
It was in their contract. It's also the first graphic novel sold to a studio not as a script.
Interesting.
Okay. Then number 8 was Star Wars.
Now,
that's
higher.
Intriguing that it's only number 8.
It would have been, okay, higher if it hadn't sucked.
Well, we got damaged by the...
Younger crowd coming to Comic-Con, too. Remember?
I feel like a beaten child.
Oh, that's true. That's true. It's no longer our generation deciding these things.
He said, before Star Wars, sci-fi films were about ideas, not special effects. They were more thoughtful. Now they've kind of changed and gone towards special effects.
Mm-hmm.
Number 7 was Terminator.
Terminator beats Star Wars.
Piece of trivia. It came from the concept of, what if Superman were bad? Okay. Mm. That's where the concept kind of came from. Okay. He said, interestingly enough, originally O.J. Simpson was supposed to be the original Terminator.
Yeah. I heard that.
Arnold was supposed to be the original dude that comes back in time that's trying to save the world.
O.J. Simpson is the Terminator.
Yeah. Number six was Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
Now,
conceptually, I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Conceptually, not as a movie.
They said, you know, they talked about the outstanding makeup effects for the time. It really is good.
Yeah. And the ending, you know, if you don't know the ending, is kind of a cool ending.
And the musical is fantastic. Dr. Zaius.
They said that great ending actually came from Blake Edwards, who came up with that. You know, he was sitting and saying, you really need something kind of like this. And he came up with this. Not Rod Serling did it. It was Blake Edwards.
Hmm. I worked with Blake Edwards.
There you go. Alien was number five. Yes. Basically a haunted house movie on a spaceship.
Okay.
Let's see. Aaron, Meryl Streep was originally considered to be Ripley.
Oh, God. No. Wow. No.
Wow.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I'm trying to imagine her in those little teeny
underwear. Don't get me wrong.
Underwear.
I respect the woman enormously.
She was beautiful when she was young.
It's not a matter of being beautiful or not.
And she can knock... She's an actress who can knock shit out of the park. Yeah. I understand.
She's an amazing actress, and I'm not going to say that she wasn't hot at one point.
You just keep on hearing Ihadafah in Africa every time you think about it.
Number four was The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Ah, great movie.
Mm-hmm. Number three was Forbidden Planet, which actually has Leslie Nielsen in it.
Yes.
Forbidden Planet sucks.
Yes.
Yeah, I haven't actually seen it. I'm kind of curious.
And Leslie Nielsen is... and was for years and years and years a straight leading man, mm-hmm. like Mr. Straight Leading Man, and was said he could never do comedy until he did comedy.
Like, he was a heartthrob for our grandparents' generation.
And number two is Blade Runner.
Two?
Mm-hmm.
Who are these people?
Now, apparently Kubrick has some footage from The Shining that was tacked onto the end of Blade Runner.
That is a... that goes back and forth. I've heard that rumor is actually false.
We'll
see.
We'll have the drive. It's the drive through the park, the car, and the drive out through the little forest.
Oh, well, I'm curious. And then number one, 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Wow. Comic Con, people
think
that.
Yeah, I know. It's really interesting. He said it's like a silent film. He said what's interesting is it was not a box office sensation until the hippies found it. And then it became huge.
Same with Star Trek. Yeah. It's so weird.
There we are.
So,
What movie do you think is missing from that list, each of you?
Well, there's two movies that they mentioned that got number 11 and number 12. I should just mention real fast. Metropolis is number 11.
That was going to be mine.
Ooh, yeah.
And number 12 was Total Recall.
Oh, come on.
Also in the top
20. No, I think that's appropriate.
Garbage.
No. That's completely appropriate.
It's very appropriate.
Oh,
if there are other movies on that list that are there because of the conceptual idea behind the movie.
Yeah.
What about it?
Is not better than fucking Total Recall?
Okay, yes, it is. You're right. You're correct.
It's an extension off of Star Wars.
People are kind of...
Standing alone.
Good.
Conceptually, the concept behind Total Recall is very, very good.
I'm talking about a movie. You can sit down and watch the movie, not concepts, or it's the guy's tennis shoes. He may have had great tennis shoes. It doesn't mean he goes in top 11.
Oh. So, top...
Christ almighty.
Scrooge McCritic over here.
Also in the top 20 was... Dr. Strangelove. So we're going to link...
Dr. Strangelove?
It's not really sci-fi, is it?
I know, but it was up there. People picked it.
Lord of the Rings isn't sci-fi.
No, that's fantasy.
You may have great tennis shoes.
So, sci-fi in the sense that the system that they were using at the time was not was futuristic when it was made.
You know, it's kind of interesting. Better than Total Recall?
It's interesting. Star Trek's not in there, yeah.
At all.
But so anyway, we'll link to this book, which of course has tons more trivia like that in it.
But with those additions, let's put out the quick question. That'll be our bit. What's missing off that list?
Yeah. What would your list be?
I'm not doing a list. Let's just do one. Okay. We're on hour number two already.
All right. I did my.
I'm asking our listeners.
We're on hour number two.
All right. Exactly. Okay. So anything else we should do before we wrap this up?
Nope.
I want to thank the people who did show up at our meet and greet. We actually had drinks with some people who listened to the show, and it was cool.
Bri, we're so sorry we didn't come to your party, dude.
Yeah,
but,
we were invited to a party, but we had that. We'd already made plans.
Not in the mood for a keg stand that night, so.
So one of our listeners, who's actually a fellow podcaster from something called geeklabel.com, wrote us a an email about Superman Returns. He says, your review was trace spiffy. Overall, much like myself, you seem to enjoy it, even though there were some flaws that tried to mess it up, but I digress. Let's talk the son of Superman and why he cannot have superpowers. Superman Returns is Superman 2.5. Brian Singer has established that and said quite often the love and admiration he has for those films. That being said, in Superman 2, when the fabled I finally get to do Lois scene happens, Superman has no powers. He went into the chamber and was bathed in red sun energy. This is what allows him to have sex with Lois without killing her, just ask Kevin Smith. He traveled back to the fortress to get his powers back, and if they had not fired Donner, we would have seen Marlon Brando tell him that he could have his powers back by using the power from the fortress, blah, 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 to get it back without Lois. But I digress, without Lois. At the end of the movie, basically what he's saying is that when Lois and Superman had their intimate moment, he had no superpowers to pass on.
That doesn't mean he's not Superman.
Well, hang on. These were normal, non-powered swimmers that got to the egg. He says, I cannot get my fellow casters to come around to my stance on this, so help me out. Why would the kid have powers when Superman would not have passed them on? Now, what my explanation to you, Billy, is this. Sorry, I'm on the other side. Here's the flaw with your logic. Superman is genetically an alien.
Yeah. Yeah.
Therefore, his child is genetically half alien. The ray took away his powers. It did not change his DNA.
Right.
He was still an alien when they had sex, just an alien without access to his powers.
Right.
That's like saying if somebody is chemically castrated and you use their sperm to inseminate a woman, that the offspring will be castrated.
Yeah, I mean, like a runner, you know, you break a runner's leg doesn't mean he's not a runner. Once it's healed, he can run again. It's like he just got handicapped for a while.
But, I actually didn't listen carefully enough in that section. I don't know if he has been told he's being turned into an actual human or just like a human.
Yeah.
So I invite any geek listeners to school us on this
if
I'm wrong.
The biggest problem with that is that she doesn't remember it. So why isn't her reaction to her being pregnant not freaky?
Well, okay, here's the thing. They at no point in the movie do they say that's the point of insemination. They never say that.
They can't have a relationship after the movie.
No, that's us imposing that on them.
Yes.
No, the whole point of the end of the movie is he can't have a relationship with her. That's why he kisses her. If then the next day he goes, fuck it, I shouldn't have...
He can't have a relationship with her where he shares every aspect of his life. But the implication is that he slept with her as Superman without revealing the Clark Kent side of him.
Oh, please. I don't think so. That'd be weak. That'd be weak.
Why?
I still don't understand how she forgets this. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever, this magical kiss.
All right,
for
anyway,
another time.
Let's close this damn thing down.
Well, let's take one quick opportunity to thank also Mark Meance from the movie Renaissance, who I also did an interview with. And maybe we'll share that interview with people as the movie Renaissance is released later this year.
Oh, excellent. And we did get an interview.
We have a monster interview coming up next week.
Matt Peter,
maybe next week. Maybe we'll see.
Matt Peter Don interviewed
George R. R.
Martin. George R. R. Martin.
Right. So
yes.
An upcoming episode, which will not be next week because we need to prepare because we're going to have a George R. R. Martin episode. You will hear that interview in there because it's big and long and meaty and awesome.
Yeah. So in the meantime, you have a couple weeks to go out and read the entire Song of Fire and Ice series. So you'll be ready and caught up for our interview.
Ice and Fire, yeah.
Is it Ice and Fire?
Yeah.
Yes.
And by the way, for anyone who has not read this, I got to tell you that this is...
it's the best series ever.
It's really good. It's up there with Tolkien. I mean, it's like, you know, really, it's some of the most
phenomenal.
But unlike
Tolkien, I like it. You know,
there you go. I mean, but it's really, it's like the new classics,
yes,
you know.
It is a new classic.
You really need to read it. Even if you don't like fantasy that much, I think you will adore this. Get it, read it.
So spread the word. We've got that coming up in the next couple weeks.
George R. R. Martin.
And all this is my warning for next year's Comic-Con. If you have a message for us, don't leave it with Phil Folio.
Exactly. All right, everybody. Have a good geek week. All right.
Geek it out.